Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Ryan, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful.
I'm having microphone problems now. You had it earlier, so I'm cranking mine around. We got two guests in the podcast room with us this morning.
We're outnumbered?
Outnumbered.
No, it's just even. We just even the odds.
Okay. We got Evan Eggersman, and he is our Trax Ag Technology and Sustainability lead. Welcome, Evan. This is our first time for Evan, and we got Sydney Calhoun, and she is our Trax Conservation Agronomy lead. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we brought them in today so they could justify their positions, right? Because we can't really, we don't know what they do.
I think that we're still defining it.
Oh, okay. All right. I was going to put them on the spot.
Well, let's put them on the spot right away with the question of the day.
Okay. All right.
So tell us, and this is the question of the day. We have a different question every time we do a podcast. And today's question of the day is, tell us about your most recent home improvement project.
Go ahead, ladies first, Sydney.
All right. Well, I had decided to put up curtains in my apartment, and I was having a really hard time finding the stud in the wall, and I had a whole bunch of problems, and so now we're just abandoning that project, and I'm spackling the wall and painting it, and now I'm going to maybe get some command strip hooks. So we'll see how that – I'll give you an update next time I'm on the podcast.
The hanging curtains project turned into a wall spackling and painting project.
Yeah.
You never did get the curtains?
I have the curtains. They're all nice and folded up, but they're not covering anything right now. Nice.
Sydney, what did you say after you missed the stud for about the fourth time?
Dang. I think it was a little different than that, but
she's from Washington County, too, so I probably know what she she threw the hammer across the living room.
Very good. Well, thanks for having me, Ryan and Sal. But my recent home improvement project is an ongoing project that started back in February. Me and my wife, we built a 32x40 shed in our backyard. So we're finishing up. I put the purlins in the ceiling and on the walls, the nail, the tin, too, and finish it.
Oh, you got the tin up inside.
And been doing some electrical work. So I'm no electrician by no means, but luckily my brother, he knows a little bit. I call him Sparky at times. So he comes down, we ran some wire, and we've been hooking it all up. So it's slowly but surely getting there, but just been working a lot in our outdoor little shed we put up.
That's a nice place. I have to come by and take another look at some of the near-finished projects. So you guys are just keep hammering away.
Yep.
No pun intended.
I want to know what kind of background you have to call a 32x40 building a shed. Well, I mean, seriously.
A garage?
There you go. Yeah, it's a shop or whatever. So, I mean, that's a shed.
Yeah.
I mean, sheds are what they have on
these
lots.
I've made sheds out of pallets before. So I've not had one for a while that I've done on my own. I think the last one I did was one day I just randomly started. I just got the tractor and chain out and started yanking landscaping out.
Oh.
And, so then it was mulch, and I got sick of doing mulch every year. So tired of doing mulch. So I just started yanking plants out and just totally decimated the entire outside of my home. Got rid of all the mulch, went back in with all new plants, all new rock, new river rock everywhere with edging, and then put a deck in. And it was all like on a whim on a Saturday. Went out there thinking I was going to trim some stuff up and ended up completely just doing all the landscaping.
Oh,
so,
my
yeah.
gosh.
So I try to stay away from those kind of projects because I'm not really good at them. But once I got started, I was like, well, that doesn't look great. That one next to it ought to go. Well, then, you know, Carla walks out and stands on the porch going, what's going on? I guess we're redoing the landscaping. So yeah, God. It was fun. I don't want to do it again for a while. But
well, that's interesting because Evan just stopped by my office this morning and said that he wants to borrow one of my dump trailers and haul some probably pea gravel or some kind of stone for the
landscaping. It's a flower bed, Ryan.
Yeah, there you go. Don't do mulch.
Well, let me help you both. And Evan, you should heed this and think long and hard because I did this about 12 years ago. My wife got the notion. She was tired of mulch and she wanted the gravel and all the landscaping. And so 13 tons of pea gravel later, it was all nicely graveled and all the flower beds and all the landscaping with the trim and stuff. And 4 years later, she's tired of the pea gravel.
So what are you going to do now?
I scooped it all back out, put it back on the dump truck and hold it back there to the lake. I didn't do it all myself. I had a work crew.
Could have sold it to Evan.
It could have, yeah, recycled it.
So what do you have now?
Mulch again.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Every day and every way we get better and better.
Yeah, I guess. Good for you.
So just think about that, Evan, because when you get tired, when she gets tired of it, you won't because you don't care, but
it'll be documented.
It'll be
on the High Ground podcast.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I'm the one that cares about that kind of stuff. So
I don't care. I used to bush hog my yard before I got married.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be the one that cares about that. So
just my last home improvement, which I have had nothing to do with, it's all contracted out and is done, is my shop. It's a shop, not a shed. It's 60 by 40 shop, and it's got 1,000 square foot, two-bedroom, two-bath on this side. And my mother-in-law has moved into there, and she has it. Her little house is looking really nice, and she parks her car in one end of my shop, and then I've got the rest of it for my stuff. So it works out really good. Just had an Amish guy make up a couple of workbenches. Remember, I was stressing about my workbenches, so got two 12-foot-long workbenches along one side. Jesus. Thinking about putting a loft in.
I think I've missed every tour of that place, or my invitation continues to get lost in the mail or something. I've heard a lot about this.
We're going to have an open house or
never
something.
Been invited to see it.
It's going to have air conditioning. After the last 2 weeks, it will have air in that shop.
Maybe we'll have to do a podcast. On site.
That would be the only way I ever get invited.
Yeah.
Have you been to it?
Nope.
You've never been either?
Heard about it. How many times?
Ridiculous.
Logan was out there 2 or 3 nights ago, and we met there.
Logan's been there?
Yeah, Logan's been there, too.
Now he's just rubbing it in.
Yeah.
Right. Wow.
And Harold Cooper went by. Our CEO went by. And Logan, you can't miss him. He's about 6'5", 6'7", tall, waving.
You can if he turns sideways. He disappears if he turns sideways.
Oh, my God.
So Harold stopped by, too?
No, he did not even look over. You know how Harold drives.
I'm not saying anything.
He was taking the corners. We better get back on track.
All right, get after it.
All right, Evan, Sydney, so tell us a little bit about, Sydney, you go first. Tell us a little bit about your history, your work history, and how you ended up at Premier Ag, how you got here today.
All right. Well, I was born and raised in Washington County on a small little farm out in Campbellsburg. I went to Purdue University and studied environmental and ecological engineering with a minor in environmental politics and policy. I kind of already had a little bit of agricultural background just growing up in a rural town and my involvement in 4-H. But then I took some classes at Purdue, thought, hey, why don't I pursue a career in this? And then I saw that this grant-funded partnership for a position here at Premier. And so I applied, and here I am now.
Here you are.
Yeah.
All right. Evan?
Very good. So I grew up in southern Indiana here, just south of Seymour. I attended Purdue University. While I was at Purdue University one summer, I got my auctioneer license. So I kind of do that on the side.
You're kind of at home talking into this microphone. You're pretty relaxed.
Yeah. So anyway, but on top of that, I've been at Premier Ag. I'm going on 2 years. But actually, it was I looked for a job when I stepped away from the family farm. I spent a lot of time looking for the job. You know, it was going to be a big change for me, kind of stepping into corporate America. But I never thought I'd end up at Premier. I looked for a job, and actually it was a recruiter, this random recruiter that I found online that got me in contact with you. And then that's when it all started.
4 miles from home.
Yeah. Yep, 4 miles right. from home. And then
corporate America.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But, so, yeah, I ended up, so I work in our Tracks Precision Ag Department, and kind of as our ag technology and sustainability lead here at Premier, and it's been a fun experience to start getting growers enrolled. It's a fun showing up at the farm gate when you're trying to get a grower money participation in a program that he doesn't have to buy anything for, and you can just simply get him dollars, and it's a fun process.
That's good, and both of y'all doing an outstanding job. We thank you for everything you do, but tell us a little bit about sustainability. So when we talk, when we hear. Matter of fact, our last guest, we kind of talked, just it seems to be on everyone's mind. and tell us a little bit about what this last 5 years, and it's become the just the awareness. So tell us a little bit about sustainability in agriculture. Okay. What does it mean to you, and what does it mean to the farmer?
Right. So the way I look at sustainability is that it's pretty broad. It's the practice of minimizing damage to the environment. But when you bring conservation into it, conservation is tends to focus more on preserving a specific resource. So in our case, fields, in my grant, watersheds. Sustainability, it has looked different year by year, and I see that with advancements in technology, we're going to have completely new processes for sustainable practices. And I'm just looking forward to being in a position that can grow with that.
Yeah.
So when I think of sustainability, the first thing that I think of passing this farm ground that's so valuable nowadays, you think of all the windmills going in, all the solar panels, that's my first concern about, the acreage that we're losing,
There's only so much.
There's only so much. But I think of sustainability. I think, a father passing it on to the next generation, that generation, keeping family farms alive and kind of profitability. Sustainability and profitability, I think, go hand in hand for me. We can do a lot of these practices, and still be profitable and doing what's best for the environment, like Sydney said.
Whenever I was a young man, and I didn't know Dad was talking about sustainability and conservation agronomy back then, but, it was awful tempting after a rain to get in my pickup truck or my Jeep at the time and head back the lane, right, because it was fun to throw mud and get my truck all, or my Jeep all muddy, and Dad would yell, "You better not be cutting any ruts." And it wasn't any fun anymore after I cut some ruts, because I got the shovel and got to fill them all back in, mm-hmm. because Dad would know that would turn into a wash eventually, and then that wash would become a ditch, and then it would become a gully, right? And, just trying to maintain our soil resources is probably one of the most critical things. And farmers with waterways and everything, they do that all the time. So tell us a little bit about one of the most recent programs.
Okay, so one of the most recent programs we enrolled in, we enrolled about 9,500 acres into a carbon sequester program where growers, they get rewarded for doing the cover crops, no-tilling that they've been. Some of the True Terra programs have been about long-term adopters, but now they got short and long-term adopters where guys can qualify for these programs. But we also enrolled some guys in a nitrogen management program where if they added a stabilizer for the first time on their operation, they could get rewarded for that. And then currently we got an exciting program coming out August 1st this fall. It's a partnership with True Terra and the USDA. It pays $80 an acre for a guy to put out a cover crop for the first time, or potentially $100 an acre if they use a cover crop and they're going to be no-till in crop year 2025. $100 an acre up to 500 acres per farmer. So, they're looking at potentially $40,000, $50,000 per grower, and this is all funded through the USDA.
So is that first-time cover crop, first-time no-till per acre or on the farm? If he's done it, is it just on that acre?
Yep, it's just on that acre. So, we got guys, I think this is why sustainability can be such a controversial topic. We got guys that's been doing these sustainable practices their whole life.
Yep.
So that can kind of be a struggle to find certain guys, but they're still trying to target guys to start these practices for the first time. But, I'm not going to – they're out there. We just got to find the growers, But
well, of course, that's based on qualifications, right? We can't handle or we can't control who qualifies in the program. They've got to enroll and enlist. But I think one of the most important things they can do is communicate with both of you and start getting some of their information together, right? I mean, I think that's been a big part, is trying to get the field boundaries and all the information, the field history, mm-hmm. and some things like that. But, Sydney, that fits right in with what you're doing, right, with some of the cover crops and kind of think about how to get more cover crops out there and getting this will be interesting to see how this program turns out, because it's explain to Evan a little bit about what some of these longer term ones have been.
So them, the long-term adopters, them the guys that say it's been no-tilling for 15, 25 years, you know, they don't have any tillage, you know, they don't have a piece of tillage tool on the property, you know. The short-term adopters would be some of the guys that maybe just started the no-till in the more recent years, you know, the last 3 to 5 years started to try the no-till. So, it's very interesting. It's kind of, you know, sustainability. I think it's the hottest topic in the world right now. Like you said, there's not a company out there that doesn't have somebody that's got a title with sustainability in it. You know, agriculture, any company out there. But I kind of see both sides of the story. You know, I got the guys that love a fall burn down. They want their fields clean all winter. They want to get out there this year, March 29th, to get them early soybeans planted, you know, early corn planted. And then you got the guys, you know, that use the cover crops. They kind of have their success stories too. Had a gentleman stop by my office to do some data collection, and it was pretty interesting. We were filling out some of his data from crop year 2023, and I kind of asked him what this one field yielded, and it got real quiet in the room, and he said 100 bushel, and it almost brought tears to his eyes. Wow. And this is a guy that I've never seen someone have a more strategic cover crop plan as far as rotation, whether it's going the corn or beans, vice versa. But he was very adamant about it, and I think he's finally seeing it finally paid off. And then, you know, you got the guys that, you know, the grandpas of the operation where they started doing some cover crops 5-10 years ago, and the father and son, they're like, oh, they didn't believe in that. And then finally, all of a sudden, grandpa, he starts raising these crazy big yields, and then they jump on the bandwagon, and next thing you know, the farmer, they're all father, son, grandpa, they're all doing their 100% cover crop on all their acres. So it's pretty interesting to see. I know cover crops, Sydney and I, when we're going on farm calls this summer, we might get something thrown at us after the struggle with cover crops have been this spring.
Yeah, it can be.
But we know, if we know anything with agriculture, no 2 years the same. So we can't let be hesitant, you know, to go out and stick to the plan with these cover crops this fall, and stick to the plan.
Kind of a love-hate relationship with cover crops. Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit to the listeners who may not be familiar some of the things that you heard when you're out there after this year. What's some of the examples?
So I'd say some of the examples, you know, obviously cereal rye. It's one of the most popular cover crop. You can get good emergence in the fall of the year. But obviously, if you don't get that sprayed early, it can get, you know, 6-8 feet tall. And basically, these fields where we get a good cover, then they basically can create a mat to hold the moisture. And then obviously this year, the way it's been with all the rains, the ground doesn't dry out right. The farmer can't get in there and plant his field. Or, you know, I don't know, you can have
it. Terminating cover crops is a real challenge sometimes.
Cover creating.
That's a plan in itself.
Yep. But so with that comes a lot of benefits, though, once you get that good cover crop established out there. But, it can be, I'd say this year, just the moisture, the added moisture to the ground. But, you know, just like that, 2 weeks of 95-degree weather.
We're dry again.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. So what's seasonality look like for your guys' job? I mean, so what do you do through the winter? What do you do while there's a crop out there growing? I mean, clearly we're in a seasonal business and everything we do. So how does your job play out? When do you get busy?
Oh, I like to stay busy year round, honestly. I think, you know, when
that sounds made up. Sydney, give us a real one. No, go ahead. I'm sorry, Evan. I'm kidding.
Yeah, so I can speak a little bit on this. After we get growers enrolled in programs, there's a lot of data collection that happens. Oh. And so a lot of the time that we've been spending, I know it is a pretty busy season anyway, but if we do start to get growers enrolled in some of these upcoming programs, a lot of the winter is going to be making sure that we have that data before the end of the year, because payouts sometimes come at the beginning, like the first quarter of the next year. And so just making sure that all our ducks are in a row so that that the farmers can get their funding that they, you know, deserve.
And part of what you've been doing is going around and meeting a lot of other soil and water folks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
soil health field days and stuff like that.
What we haven't had really is we don't have a lot of connectivity. I mean, you said corporate America, but we are a business and we've got our own thing that we're trying to do. So we haven't really had not an ambassador, but somebody that can connect some of the government resources and Premier Ag together. And that's what this whole
grant has been about was, for the listeners that aren't aware, and probably very few are, is this was a first-time partnership between National Fish and Wildlife Foundation and the Nature Conservancy and Soil and Water Conservation District of Washington County, and to start this program and this position. So that was it was neat that this is the first time we've done this.
Yeah.
Working so far, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I do look forward to getting our growers, you know, connected on a more local level as well, to Premier, even if they're not like have an account with us at the time. Let's talk about like what funding opportunities exist through Truterra, through the local level, through the federal level, and see if like we can add any other services as well.
Good. That was kind of a big takeaway, I think. You know, we talk about conservation, sustainability. It's basically what the podcast is about. But growers are doing these. I think it's just about getting them to enroll. You know, the whole Truterra thing. It's basically, you know, a guy asks, he gets nervous about maybe sharing his yields or, you know, what he spread fertilizer wise because he thinks someone's going to come limited. But it's not that at all. The way Truterra works, you know, the reason they require that data, it's a food, the CPG companies, they license that farmer's data, and that's how they eventually get paid for it, because it's their licensed data they're getting paid for through these programs.
Okay. So. And this comes through Land O'Lakes, right?
Yep, Land O'Lakes, Truterra, and they got this program that comes out this fall. It's USDA Truterra partnership, so it all comes through a Climate Smart grant. But another kind of exciting thing about Truterra, they're getting into the livestock markets. I don't know if you've heard, you know, the biofuels, the 40B, the 45Z, this tax credit that the fuel producers, potentially maybe the farmers, are going to get. Truterra is... they're being very prepared, so when it comes out, you know, they're not diving in too soon. You know, the whole carbon intensity is going to play a role in, you know, some of these future programs. So it's a very exciting time, and Premier Ag, we're going to be ready to serve our customers the best we can when the time comes.
So you have a technology piece in your title as well.
Yep.
So let's talk about that for a little bit. Let's move from sustainability just for a minute, and we'll get back to that. But what about the technology piece, and how does it work together? So
the technology, there's all different kind of softwares out there, whether it's through AgLeader, John Deere Operations, Climate Field View. I try to help guys get set up either in their planning. You just get some planning monitors set up in the spring to record some of that data that flows into the cloud automatically. And then in the fall of the year, you know, set their monitors up to where they can record that harvest data. And it plays totally into some of these programs, the requirements of some of these programs. Then also another technology piece, got a busy season coming up. We're moving in on the aerial fungicide season for, you know, as tar spot's been confirmed here in Jackson County, you know, and there's going to be a wide planting window. You know, you got the early planted corn, you got some June planted corn. But Mike Streffling and I, we dispatch all the either helicopter, airplane, or drones to do the aerial fungicide application this season. So that's getting ramped up. We got a lot of acres entered in yesterday. It's crazy. We get one rain, then it makes the determining.
Changes everything.
It changes everything. We're going to have a crop again, a record crop. You know, we go from holding off, we got the half inch of rain, and by God, the phone's blowing up, and you can't get it while it's hot.
That's good. There for a while, there wasn't much leaf surface to spray fungicide on. Yeah. It was all wrapped pretty tight.
Yeah.
We've been running through 95 degrees and no rain for a while. So you're all right. Spirits got lifted with a little bit of rain. So
you know, one thing, Evan, and I know that you all dispatch it through the tracks department, but I think with the aerial application of cover crops, I really think that's probably something we should start looking at doing more of into a standing crop. I know it's not the best way. The best way is probably to get, you know, make sure you drill it and a good even stand. But there's nothing, I don't think, more efficient and fast as getting a cover crop on than aerial applying it.
Yep. So as this fungicide season kind of winds down, you know, late in August, and, you know, the airplanes and drones, they get probably a month break, and then we'll go out and then start seeding in that standing crop ahead of time. And it really works. So last year was, you know, we've had a couple dry falls to get cover crops established early on, but we saw some really, really good looking fields, cover crops that got started early last year, you know, before the combine even hit the field.
Good deal.
So, yeah, that's good. That's good. Anything else for him?
I got to tell a quick story. When Sydney first got here, we were getting her a vehicle lined out, and we put you in a Explorer. How many miles were on that Explorer?
Like 265,000.
But who's keeping track, right?
Apparently no one.
Oh my gosh.
I started to. I watched that number go up, and I was like, oh, we're about to run into a problem.
So one of our coworkers, he was, make sure you had your best interest in mind, and went and got brakes put on it, right? But then he gave you a warning, said you had to, when you locked the door, or when you unlocked it, the horn would blow. And gave you, you had like 5 seconds to get
in. Oh, yeah. Because the key fob didn't work, I would have to stick it in the door and unlock it manually. And so then I had like 10 seconds to get it into the ignition before it would start to like blare. And one time I gave it to my sister. She had to run down and grab something that I'd left in there. No. And she didn't realize what had happened. And so she gives me a call. She's like, Sydney, It's honking. What do I do? And I was like, run down there.
Run.
Yeah.
This whole time we were promising her that she was going to get a different vehicle, and it never something would happen and it wouldn't be here. And then one day you called and said had some fluid under it, right?
Yeah.
You got back to your apartment and that was it.
That was it.
We had to go get it with Evan. You had to get y'all. Did you both y'all go
that,
get it?
Yeah, with Caroline.
Yep.
She helped strap that down.
We said, heck with the tow bill. We took a flatbed down there, strapped it down, chained it, and got it back to Salem. And on we went.
Yeah. It's going to be in a sale pretty soon. I think we're going to let that one go.
Okay, good. Wow. I was nervous. Okay, when you said it was done in the shop, I was like, oh, man, do I have to drive this thing again?
All those years of dedicated service, and you're just going to auction it off.
Hey, Sal, I know a good auction barn.
Here we go. He is selling.
Well, Ryan, do you have anything
else?
No,
I don't. Guys, thanks, and we appreciate what you're doing, and I know that the farmer connection is very important, and you guys are sort of leading the edge. I mean, they're used to us selling seed and fertilizer and that kind of stuff, but I know that the customer calls you guys make, to some of them, that's new territory. So appreciate the effort that you're putting forth. That's all
definitely
I've
got. Very valuable. That's one of the things most important is for the farmers to be able to show how they farm. That's because people want to know. They want to know where their food comes from, and they want to know how it was handled. And I think that data collection that you were talking about is going to be a big part of it.
Very good. All right.
Thank you, Sal. Thank you, Ryan.
Sure.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, that's another episode. Go ahead, Evan. You got something?
I said we better end it before I'll start rattling off auction off a car here.
We could go ahead and open the bidding up for that Explorer if you want, although I don't think you guys sold it well. I don't want you writing the article for my vehicle when everyone sell one.
We'll have to redo this one. It's a little better.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. If you please like and subscribe.
Thanks.
Thank you.